The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, what's going on?
And it's a new episode of Martinis and Murder. Yeah. And I wanted to let you intro because I feel like I'm always the one intro.
You know, I feel like you really, I don't know. I'm like so used to having you be like, hey, everyone,
hey,
you take your deep breath.
Whoa.
And so, you know, I always started off singing, but
that's true.
Thank you for letting me take the reins this one. And I apologize for my singing.
Look, you don't have to thank me.
Yeah.
This is,
well, I guess it is both of us.
Yeah, totally. This is both of our show. I did a fun little presentation yesterday. We should tell people how that went.
We've mentioned before, I work at Bravo, you work at Oxygen, although mm-hmm. now I'm sort of part of the Oxygen family, which is great. But we're sister networks, and we do town halls biannually,
which,
every 6 months or
and
so.
And a town hall, for anyone who doesn't know, is just a state of the business where everybody in the network kind of gets together and we hear updates about what everyone's doing.
Yeah, and the department and our president answers questions, which are always, and they can be silly, like, are we getting more women's bathrooms to, like,
what's with the parking?
Exactly. So that was really fun, and John ended, actually, town hall with a big presentation on, you know, where Oxygen's going in the digital realm. We had a whole thing on Martinis and Murder, and let me just say. Let me just say, because I know the promos haven't run for the new Oxygen yet.
Oh, right.
It looks so fucking good.
It does.
And I will say that yellow and black are mm-hmm. part of the color themes. And John came in. Yellow is one of my favorite colors. John came in with a sexy black suit. And he wore like a thin, perfect, like caution tape yellow tie.
Yeah.
You looked so great.
Keep
you did
going.
Such a fun job.
Go ahead.
You suck and I hate you.
Oh, okay,
sucks.
Great.
But you were wonderful.
Thank you.
You and Eric killed it. So he represented Martinis and our fans.
Yeah, totally. I was just going to say, what I wanted to bring up on the show was that we did highlight some of what you guys have been saying to the Bravo and Oxygen audience. And there was even a point where we showed the fan art that someone sent in of what they think Matt looks like.
And Matt stood up
and
in front of the whole company
Matt
stood next to the drawing.
And he stood next to the drawing on the screen, and he didn't know he was going to do that until about, I think, 20 minutes before the presentation. So
the company laughed so
hard.
So
yes.
Please keep sending us your fan submissions for what Matt looks like.
Absolutely. Please draw in some way and take a picture. Send it to me at Jay Thrasher. Send it to Darren at Carpe Darren.
Yes.
We want to know what you think Matt looks like.
We want to capture his essence.
Yes, absolutely.
You know?
Well, we are continuing Crimes of the 80s month on Oxygen.com with today's disturbing 80s serial killer, the Grim Sleeper.
Yeah, what a fanciful name. We're kind of going to learn at the end of why he's called the Grim Sleeper.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a catchy name, and to obviously get us nice and drunk, here's Matt to tell us what we're drinking on this week's episode.
Yeah.
We should mention, however, that this past Monday, June 19th, was National Martini Day, all of our favorite days of the year.
Of course.
So this is an extra special martini for the big day. A week later, a little procrastination teeny.
All right, take it away, Matt.
Hello, everyone. Today we're having a red, white, and blue mojito. So it's really mojitos and murder this week.
I didn't know it was a mojito. I'm so excited.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear any shit about how lazy I am. This required a lot of muscle.
So boring.
I will say, It's almost the 4th of July, and without giving anything away, the LAPD worked through the 4th of July weekend in 2010 to crack this case. And the killer was arrested on July 7th, 2010. So the ingredients are 3 tablespoons fresh blueberries.
They're here too.
Oh. Plus additional garnish, 2 fresh strawberries diced, 10 to 15 fresh mint leaves, 1/2 medium lime juiced, 1 teaspoon of granulated sugar, 1 1/2 ounces of white rum, ice, and club soda. And you have to muddle the blueberries, strawberries, mint, lime juice, and sugar in the bottom of a tall serving glass until the sugar is dissolved and the berries break down. And then you add the rum and stir to combine. Then you fill the glass with ice, top it with club soda, and that's about it.
Did you do all this stuff for us today, Matt?
Yeah.
Because if I don't taste any muddling, I'm going to be pissed.
I've done half of everything already.
Okay.
Half.
Well,
it's recording time.
And the rest is about to be done right now.
So what you're saying, though, is that you did not finish the task before we started whenever the due date was, right?
No.
Oh, no? Okay.
No, that's not how it works. I waited on half of the recipe so it would be as fresh as possible. I thought every detail out on this one.
By the way, I think now is a good time for a ZipRecruiter ad.
Oh. So Matt can find a new job?
Exactly.
Yes. Here's to you, Matt.
All right. Well, thanks, Matt, for that very
riveting.
Well, the other thing is, this is, I feel like, the most ingredients we've ever had in a martini.
And certainly with like instructions, not just ingredients. Like, well, actually, you have to pour the ice over some.
Yeah.
Ooh,
oh, a little shaking in the back. Not our traditional shaking.
No, it's a muted shake.
Is this what a muddling is in the background? I'm also a huge fan of mojitos, and I didn't know that's what this was. So I'm particularly excited to get drunk on martinis and murder.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
Duh.
Okay, well, thanks, Matt. But before we get into the Grim Sleeper episode, we have a big announcement.
That's right. Last week, we hinted that we had a fun new way to interact with us coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that time is now,
John
Thrasher.
Tell us what it is.
We are excited to announce the Martinis and Murder Hotline.
Ooh.
It's hot because you and I are extremely good looking.
Well, it's also hot because we're in the studio that has no windows or ventilation.
True.
So it's very
warm. It's not
warm.
A lukewarm line. It's no. A hotline.
So starting today, you're able to call and leave us voicemails. These voicemails will be listened to and maybe even played right here on the podcast. You can leave us feedback, martini recipes, case suggestions, or you can even yell at Matt for constantly dropping the ball.
I would really love that, actually, most of all. So stop what you're doing right now. Before we get into this week's murder, call us.
Yes.
All we need is your first name, your last initial, and where you're from, city and state, whatever details you want to impart about your life. Are you a Gemini? Do you like sushi? Do you walk along on the beach?
We would love to hear these details.
You must be 18 or older to leave a message, however.
So the number to call, I'm sure you guys are really excited about this, is 212. This is obviously a U.S. number, by the way. 212-664-2072. That's 212-664-2072.
We're so looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about the show. We got to meet many of you at CrimeCon. Well, John did.
Yeah.
I was unfortunately not there. And
yeah. We were there in spirit.
I was. Yeah. I was. My essence was there. And we wanted to keep connecting and having fun. So it's just kind of a chance for us to all hang out and talk and gab and share your opinions of the podcast with us. Let's get into this week's murder, because this murder happens to have so many details of what actually happened to the victims that it was even hard, we found, getting through the production meeting.
Yeah, no,
we had countless conversations of what we should include and what we shouldn't, and I highly encourage anyone out there, as we're discussing the murder, to do your own research, because there's so many victims that they deserve to be known. It's important
on
for
their
them.
Own.
Yeah.
And also, you know, we're highlighting a handful of them, you know, unfortunately there were many in this case. So this is the story of the longest acting serial killer in California history. We mentioned the Grim Sleeper at the top of the show. His name is Lonnie Franklin Jr., but he's best known as the Grim Sleeper. He was given this alias because his reign of terror lasted 30 years, but police initially thought he had a 14-year break between murders. Now they aren't even so sure about that. There may be dozens of additional victims.
Exactly.
It all started in South Los Angeles in the mid-80s. Again, we're still sticking to our 80s month theme with Oxygen. When this crack crack epidemic was hitting an all-time high. It feels like so many of our stories start in Southern California in the 80s. What do you think's going on back then?
I don't know. Intense heat? Like, I really don't know what
Matt
was happening
was
because it seems, well, that's, yeah. I mean, that answers our question.
That answers most of it.
But it did seem like a particularly dangerous time. I feel like all over, yeah. at least the United States, the 80s right. was not overly a safe.
No.
You know, certainly New York City was not that way. My right. parents talk about, you know, Needle Park, all that type of stuff. And so yeah. it does kind of fit with the theme of nowhere felt safe. But it does seem odd that we're always going back to California.
Yeah, and, you know, all of this sort of epidemic with drugs. In fact, during Franklin's trial, Deputy District Attorney Beth Silverman described it as a lethal epidemic.
Absolutely.
Silverman said that during the trial, all but one of Franklin's victims had cocaine in their system at the time of the autopsy. So just to give you a snapshot of what's going on.
And more importantly, keep that detail in mind because yeah. the victims aren't adults, not saying that it's okay for adults to have cocaine, but some of them are yeah. young as 15.
15, yeah. She also said that many of the victims were prostitutes who worked to pay for their drug habit and that Franklin preyed on their vulnerabilities. Have I had a drink yet? Why can't I read?
I don't know, but I need a fucking drink,
Matt. All of
Matt.
His victims were either shot, strangled, or unfortunately sometimes both.
So that's his method of
yeah.
death by hand.
Yeah, I mean,
ooh.
Just for those who can't see, we just got our first.
Smells very fresh.
Our first serving, I guess you could say.
Our first helping
round
of martini.
Our first round.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay, cheers,
bitch.
Here we go. I'm gonna take. Sorry, Matt. I didn't cheers you when I tried. Mojito. First impressions.
Oh,
you
Matt.
You go first. Good,
Matt. You can stay on for another week. You have one more
good?
Week of employment.
Okay,
yeah,
my turn.
You can't taste the alcohol.
This is for everybody who loves the slurping noises, which are like three of you. Ooh.
Right? Very impressed.
Wow.
Guys, make this one. This could be the summer drink.
Yeah, we might have to do this a few times.
Yeah, it's delish.
You're
having two today.
I might, yeah.
You always have like half.
I know. I never really drink that much. All of the victims, as I mentioned, were either shot, strangled, or sometimes both. But here's a really, truly disturbing detail. Some of the victims were shot at such close range that the gun left burn marks on their bodies and clothes. Others were strangled with their own jewelry. I mean,
then that means the gun would have to be almost pressed up right against their skin
exactly.
for that to happen, which is, there's something so brutal and so intimate. And I don't mean intimate in a good way. I mean
right,
in
right.
a bad way of these murders, like a gun pressed up against your chest,
totally.
You know?
Nearly all the victims were disposed of like they were trash. They were typically found in alleys and dumpsters and bushes by the side of the road. And, you know, in our pre-production meeting, I really wasn't ready for this detail. It just shows such a lack of humanity and compassion, and it just really bothered me. I mean, we were learning the details and trying to move through our meeting, but that one, I just sat there for a minute, and I was like, that in particular, the way someone could just dispose of a body like it was nothing really seemed to bother me.
That's probably like the worst thing a human being can
yeah.
do to another human being, and let alone afterwards. It's
right.
It's callous. It's heartless. Mm-hmm. I don't even. It's very difficult. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, Franklin's victims were all black women between the ages of 15 and 35,
ugh.
So young, and were killed in the South Los Angeles area, which is sandwiched between downtown Compton and LAX, which is the Los Angeles International Airport.
Yeah.
So actually similar to last week's episode.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah, these victims were all similar in demographic of some sort and killed near the sketchier parts of the city near the near the airport, just like last week with that sketchy Seattle area
right.
for the Green River Killer.
The SeaTac area from last week.
Exactly. Their bodies were typically covered up with trash or discarded mattresses or whatever else was on the street. So,
yeah.
you know, they were not
treated like trash.
Treated
sadly.
Like trash.
Yeah.
One of our researchers, actually, Haley Fox, who lives in L.A., did a lot of research for this episode of Martinis and Murder, and she actually worked with a reporter named Christine Pelisek, who spent years on the case, broke the story, and just published a book called The Grim Sleeper, The Lost Women of South Central. So read that if you guys have any interest in this case, because it seems beyond fascinating, especially all the details. So the Grim Sleeper's youngest victim was a 15-year-old named Princess Berthomieu. I believe that's how you pronounce it. Berthomieux.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it could be French.
Could be French, Berthomieu, whatever, yeah.
But that's how, yeah, it could be Berthomieu. She was found dead. Again, she was 15. She was found dead in an alley with visible signs of strangulation and sodomy. She had a really, really rough life from a young age. According to Pelisek's book, she had been placed in foster care by the age of 3. Mm. She settled in with a loving family for a stint, but when her new foster mom died of heart failure, Princess was on the streets and fell in with a pimp, unfortunately. Yeah. So that's kind of how she got involved with, you know,
this lifestyle
and the Grim Sleeper picked her up. Now, Deborah Jackson was 29 years old and the mother of 3 children. She was shot 3 times in the chest. Mm. Her body was actually found hidden underneath a carpet in a South LA alley. Jackson was wearing jeans and a sweater, but no underwear when she was discovered. Her sweater was pulled up to her breasts, and her body was overrun with maggots.
Oh, my God.
Which means that she was just discarded like trash, as we said. And even though there's a lot of depressing details here, there's actually some great news. One of Franklin's would-be victims, Anitra Washington, managed to survive a brutal attack by Franklin and lived to testify about it 27 years later in court.
And I'm like, let's go, Anitra. Congratulations.
I mean, she survived, and when you hear about what happened, like,
totally,
the details are kind of nuts when you think about it. So let me break them down for you, and we can comment on them. She recalled the incident vividly, even 27 years later, and said she had been walking to her friend's house when a man in orange Pinto pulled up beside her and asked if she wanted a ride. She got in, and after a stop at what Franklin said was his uncle's house, he shot Washington in the chest while she was sitting in the passenger seat.
She shot her. Like, who does that?
At first, Washington hadn't realized what had happened. Then she noticed blood leaking from her chest. I'm sure she was so caught off guard, obviously.
Right.
And in just complete shock that the adrenaline rushing through her body, she didn't even notice it until she could see it for herself.
Yeah.
And according to the Washington Post, she testified that she said to him, quote, "You shot me." And then she asked him why.
Right.
When she tried to get out of the car, Franklin threatened to shoot her again. He forced himself on top of her, took pictures of her as she went in and out of consciousness.
That's so weird to me.
And then pushed her out of the car and drove off, according to the story by the LA Times. Yeah, because, I mean, he's raping a...
Or whatever
he's doing. He's on top of...
And taking pictures. So I was like... He has a gun in one hand and like a camera in another. Again, don't forget, there are no cell phones at this time.
It's like a sick fucking game with this guy. Washington actually managed to drag herself to her friend's house, who later drove her to the hospital, which is literally a feat of strength. I can't imagine. And when police searched Franklin's house upon his arrest, they found a photo of a bloody Washington, apparently taken by Franklin during the attempted murder.
It's almost like, you know how in last week's episode we talked about how the guy liked to go back to the place where his victims were?
And sleep with his wife or with the dead bodies?
It feels like maybe the photos, taking of the photos, is an attempt to kind of relive this moment after it happens.
Or it could be like a trophy for him, you know? Like, this is the keepsake of something that I accomplished in a sick way. Yeah. I'm just saying that it's a little bit it's a token of them.
Well, another thing, too, I don't remember, I forget which episode it is, but we talked about somebody, I think it was one of the teenagers who stabbed one of their best friends from an early episode of Martinis and Murder, and one of her, whenever, like, the girl was being murdered, she kept saying, why are you doing this to me? And it recalled that to me because, you know.
That could have been Skylar Nice.
I think it was Skylar Nice. Yeah. One of them, I can't remember, we'll have to go back and listen, but I find it interesting that you hear these people's, like, last words and there it's just confusion, you know. Luckily Anitra, you know, survived, but she was maybe on the brink of death, frankly.
This is also a good lesson to not get into people's cars,
right,
who are just pulling up. First off, don't get into an orange Pinto,
right? Well, especially in 2000,
you're driving an orange Pinto,
if it's
you're
2017
trouble.
And a Pinto pulls up to you, it's probably not a good idea.
Like, damn,
to get in.
Girl, get a new car.
Right.
But don't go in to anybody that's offering you a ride.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
A couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So let's talk about the investigation. This case is really shocking for so many reasons. The fact that Franklin was able to operate for over 22 years without being caught is just like the tip of the iceberg, basically.
And that's a lifetime, it feels like.
I mean, yeah, that is. At the time of the murders, the LAPD was accused by some of the public of being lazy in their investigation.
Was Matt Murrow an LAPD officer
in
at the time?
In the 80s? It's possible.
It's possible.
Critics said the cops didn't do their job, like Matt, and didn't follow up on leads in large part because they didn't care about the victims, since some were sex workers and all were black women. You know, this is very similar, I think, to our coverage of Canada's Highway of Tears murders, in that it just seemed like police didn't care because of the demographic. And
because they were indigenous and prostitutes and the inherent racism and the lack
and
of
classism. Yeah.
It's rampant through a lot of these cases.
Yeah. Not even, you know, in the U.S., but obviously with Canada. There
of course.
Too. A woman by the name of Margaret Prescott, a community activist in South L.A., led the charge against the police and was pivotal in educating the women in the area that there was a serial killer on the loose. You know, again,
there's no Facebook,
there's no social media, where I feel like, you know, if there's a community problem, you kind of learn about it quickly on social media. At least I've noticed that in my experience. Prescott and her supporters would also hold weekly vigils outside of the LAPD headquarters in order to drum up media attention and put pressure on the cops to find and arrest this unknown killer. Police deny that there was laziness or indifference and say that they worked hard to pinpoint Franklin. At one point, there were 19 detectives on the case, which is quite a lot. From both the Los Angeles Police Department and the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, and they formed what became known as the Southside Slayer Task Force, according to Pelisek's book. And I just feel like we need a task force name for us here. You know, we're doing some work here on the podcast with this stuff. Should it be the Martinis Task Force? I don't know.
Yeah, Teeny Task Force.
Teeny Task Force. I love that.
You should mention, though, that the Southside Slayer is another name, I believe, for the Grim Sleeper
I guess so, yeah.
So I think they're using two different terms, or maybe the Grim Sleeper, because this was happening and he didn't take his quote-unquote hiatus yet.
Right.
That's the name that they were giving them, just not to confuse you guys out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Cops say it took them so long to pinpoint Franklin because it was a chaotic time in South L.A. I would agree with this since, we've covered so many crazy things going on in Southern California on this show alone.
And there was a lot of things going on then, especially in the 80s, especially with the drugs. So
yeah, totally.
It probably was hard to pinpoint anything at that point without DNA.
Well, I was just going to say, there was this crack epidemic, a wave of violent crime, and DNA technology was very limited at this point. So police had to rely on basic clues like witness testimony and ballistics evidence to try and connect all of these dots, which I can only imagine is nearly impossible,
extremely difficult considering the number of victims too.
Right. And with all the other active serial killers in the area. And yes, you heard that right. There were so many active serial killers in Los Angeles during the late 80s that police had a hard time sorting out who did what. According to Pelisek's book, there were actually 6 serial killers operating in a 51 square mile area of Los Angeles at the time, including the infamous Night Stalker, who was known for sneaking into women's houses at night and attacking them while they slept. And also, if you listen to the very first two episodes of Martinis and Murder, you'll recall that the East Area Rapist, a.k.a. the Golden State Killer, was also active in Southern California during the 80s. Like I said, we've covered this, these crazy things.
I mean, and yeah, they still haven't found out who that is. Yeah. So, I mean, these cases, Matt, even then, like... Yeah.
When we were at CrimeCon, Matt went to a panel about the Golden State Killer, right, Matt? And you can check out his coverage of that on Oxygen.com if you're interested. LAPD Detective Darren Dupree, which is spelled D-A-R-Y-N.
I can't believe
just
it.
Just like you.
That's the connection.
That's the connection. We have a connection to every single case that we don't know of until we start researching it.
Let go.
Yeah, Darren Dupree said that between the spike in violent crime and the crack crack epidemic, which is very hard to say, especially after a martini, and serial killers, there were so many people dying in South Los Angeles at the time, it was difficult for police to even decipher the different MOs. So... basically, you
God,
know,
what a shitty time to be living in South LA.
Well, I was going to say, and it's understandable that people think that they're being lazy with this because to them,
they're not finding anything.
They're not. Yeah, exactly. And so, but you have to look at it from the police perspective. It's like they didn't have a lot to go with and there was so much going on.
It's like finding a needle in 28 haystacks.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It's not just one. It's a million of them.
But that many serial killers in that square mile of a radius.
Yeah, there's something going on.
Oh, that's so
I always
disturbing.
Hated LA and this is why. They breed those serial killers
there
over there. It's obvious.
California, and then we've got Matt over here.
Exactly.
Like, you never know when he's going to sneak up behind you with a peeler.
Exactly. Just with a peeler. Or a butter knife.
Yeah.
So how Franklin was actually caught is pretty interesting to this case. It's probably one of the crazier parts of the story. So let's take it back to 2008, you know, 9 years ago now, which is a little crazy.
Yeah.
So when Franklin's son, according to the LA Times, was arrested for firearm and drug charges, and his DNA was sent to a state databank. When initial searches for the Grim Sleeper turned up no matching DNA, again, this was back in the 80s before they had that, a new tool for solving cases was approved in California in 2010. So it's called a familial DNA search. It basically identifies relatives via DNA. So if you're put in the system, if my brother, we have very similar DNA, and it might say like, oh, they're related to this crime.
It's a close match.
It's a close match. So according to the LA Times, a familial search of prisons had come up with a convict whose DNA indicated that he was a close relative of the serial killer. I mean, what are the fucking chances of that? I mean, they must have freaked out when they saw it, you know, 30 years later.
Right.
The LAPD drew up a family tree of the prisoner and worked through the 4th of July weekend, as we said, of 2010 to look at which relatives were the right age and lived near the murder scenes. Well, the prisoner's father emerged as the suspect.
Mm.
And to confirm a DNA match, a couple of LAPD detectives who were conducting surveillance on Franklin watched him head into a Southern California pizza place for a kid's birthday party. I mean, that's your big mistake. Why are you eating pizza in California?
Well, and also, how are you killing people and then going to a kid's pizza party?
Isn't that sick?
I'm just thinking, like, are you one of those people that has, like, completely different lives?
He must compartmentalize, because to not even let on.
Right.
This is a married man. I mean, we'll get into him.
Yeah, that's true.
But, like, he's going to a fucking
kid's birthday party.
So following him in there, one of the detectives posed as a restaurant employee and quietly collected Franklin's trash when he was done. They also confiscated a partially eaten piece of pizza.
Now, look, I just had a salad for lunch today and threw it away in a trash can on 6th Avenue here in New York City. Could someone be digging through that trash looking for my DNA? Apparently that's a thing that happens. This detail made me second guess, like, every single cashier I'll ever come in contact with.
I did give you my cookie dough, like, ice cream earlier, so my DNA wouldn't be on it. They're going to find your DNA.
Darren did stop by and give me cookie dough ice cream, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And so if we're both potentially killers here...
No, you're fucked.
No,
I'm fine. But this actually reminds me of the Stephanie Lazarus case, which we covered a few weeks ago, who was that cop who was obsessed with, you know, who killed the wife of the guy that she was obsessed with, because that's how they found her out.
That's right.
They rummaged through her trash. They saw her putting something away, and that the spit matched the bite mark DNA.
Right, I remember.
That's what we were talking about. And so this is a very common thing. And, you know, if you've killed someone, watch your trash.
I was putting the show together a little bit here on the agenda, and I was like, why have I heard this before? Yeah. Oh, right, because it was only a few weeks ago that we talked about
that. Yeah, that was the Stephanie Lazarus case that we discovered in. So they obviously brought these samples, this partially eaten piece of pizza, in for testing and matched Franklin's DNA to some of the victim's bodies, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So Lonnie Franklin Jr., a.k.a. the Grim Sleeper, was arrested 2 days later on July 7th.
Okay.
When Franklin was taken into custody and police searched his property, get this, mm-hmm. they found guns, jewelry,
right.
videos, homemade porn, and disturbingly, according to the LA Times, more than 1,000 photos of women.
Oh my God.
The LAPD released 180 photos of the women and posted them in an online gallery in the hope that their friends and families mm-hmm. may be able to identify them. But that's a huge database, and it's 180 of 1,000.
Well, and also imagine having to like be like, oh, there's a database with maybe my murdered sister. Let me go look through gory, disgusting pictures.
Although, it's probably good that the police did that to offer closure to some of those families.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe they thought they were missing and didn't know what happened. And
right.
the photos are extremely creepy, as you can imagine. We don't even know if Franklin took them all because he refused to even talk to the police. So some of the photos are taken outside. Women are smiling. It almost seems like they're posing for the pictures, yeah. like a normal photo is being taken. And other photos, though, women look unconscious, maybe even dead, ugh. Which goes along with Anitria's case right. about, you know, him taking photos. And according to the Washington Post, an LAPD police chief said at the time, quote, these people are not suspects. We don't even know if they're victims.
Yeah.
Then there's so many photos. We don't know who they are. As recently as last year, however, there were still 35 women from the stash of photos that the police posted online yet to be identified.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Well, let's talk about who Lonnie Franklin Jr. is, but I do want to let Matt know that
yeah,
I
we
have
might need
finished
a refill, Matt.
My first mojito.
Matt's falling asleep. You understand? He's like, he's snoring in the back. Matt, wake him up.
I'm not saying I need one right now. I'm just simply letting you know. Matt, what's up, Matt? Go ahead.
He's not happy with this batch. He's not happy with the batch.
It's no good.
I like it.
I know how to make a good mojito. I'm going to have to make another one another time.
Okay.
My own mojito.
I mean,
I know what the problem is. There's too many strawberries in it. But the problem is I've never made this recipe before, and, you know.
I mean, I like it. So
thanks,
don't.
Matt.
Yeah, make sure we don't get those mixed up, though. I don't need any Darren DNA. As he takes our glasses away.
Yes.
So Franklin was a sort of solid, stout man who seemed to wither after his arrest. And by the time he had faced trial, was sort of the shell of his former self. In fact, looking at him in court, it was difficult to imagine such a seemingly small man could commit such horrific atrocities, you know.
I wanted to stop you right there, actually, yeah. because usually during our pre-production meetings, as Matt and John are sort of going through this, you know, they give us an outline and we start talking about it and what we want to say and how we want to present the case to you guys. And always I'm on my phone or I make Google image the murderer in the case or some of the victims or Matt has a printout because... And I always encourage people to do this. I think it really helps to like set the scene for so many people. And
yeah.
it's real. I just like the look of a killer. Yeah. And you should know that a lot of these people look completely normal. That's, and they could be on the subway next to us. And
I'm going to get to that in a second.
I think it's important for visuals is what I was going to say to you.
Absolutely.
But I'm always like, John, look. Always. Every time.
And I appreciate that. I think it's good to visualize these things and know that they aren't like these creepy monsters who look like Frankenstein. Like, these are regular folks.
Yeah.
Franklin had been a retired garbage collector for the city of Los Angeles. And
makes sense, though.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, that's such a sort of blue-collar job, you know? Like, this is something you probably know if you live in a community that has a garbage collector. You probably maybe know that person, or you wave to them.
Yeah, like your neighborhood guy. Yeah.
And he was living off of his disability pension checks while also working occasionally as a neighborhood mechanic.
Yep.
He lived in South Los Angeles bungalow with his wife Sylvia, who he had been married to for more than 30 years. The couple had children as well. So again, it's just like everything's so typical and traditional here.
I mean, how he pulled this off for 22 years without, I mean, we don't know if the wife, we don't know anything.
Yeah.
We don't have any record of what she said or not, but like, I imagine she didn't know what the hell
was going
on. How did
on.
He pull this off? There must be some type of, you're living two completely different lives.
His neighbors described him as a kind man who volunteered in the community and helped elderly residents of the block by fixing their cars for free. I mean,
so
then a neighbor told the LA Times, quote, "You needed your car fixed? He'd do it dirt cheap. He'd help you out however he could, cut your grass, put up your Christmas lights. He helped all the elderly on the block." End quote. So Franklin and Sylvia live smack dab in the middle of where the murders had all taken place. In fact, many of the women's bodies were found mere blocks from Franklin's home.
Ugh.
You know, many serial offenders, rapists or killers, whatever, began attacking around their homes, but they often branch out so that they don't get caught.
Right.
We kind of talked a little bit like this about the Ted Bundy thing on last week's episode.
Right.
This was the case with the East Area Rapist, Golden State Killer, who started attacking women in a specific neighborhood in Sacramento and then branched out all over Northern California before moving to Southern California. Franklin didn't need to do that, though. He attacked all around his house and neighborhood, and he still wasn't caught.
And that could have been a sign of the times. Like, there was so much murder happening.
Right.
And so many of these unknown serial killers on the loose.
Yeah.
That the cops probably didn't even... There's too many cases to solve. It was strength in numbers at the time for him. You know what I mean? Like, he probably couldn't have done that now.
Totally, I agree. Leading up to his murder charges, Franklin had accumulated a long list of problems. According to the LA Times, quote, Franklin was arrested at least 15 times for car theft, burglary, receiving stolen property, assaults, firearms possessions, and other crimes, end quote. So he may have appeared to be this type of guy, but he was not maybe acting this particular way.
Yeah, he'll fix your car for dirt cheap because he's just going to steal it from someone else later. Thank you, Matt. Here's round two.
Hoping no DNA was swapped.
We'll see.
As we take this sip.
Cheers, bitches.
Yeah, cheers, bitch, for number two. Okay. Ooh, one's stronger.
It's stronger, but it's also a little bit more fizzier.
Okay.
Like, I'm sensing a little bit more seltzer in this one.
I'm into it, though.
I'm in. It's so refreshing. I'm fucking in. Could be chilled, but I'm not going to complain.
In fact, at the time of Valerie McCorvey's murder?
McCorvey.
Franklin was supposed to be behind bars, but he had been released 4 months early as part of the L.A. Sheriff's Department's efforts to reduce overcrowding, according to a source from the L.A. Times.
To reduce overcrowding, they let this fucker go.
Franklin's criminal behavior transcended continents, even. According to the DA, he was convicted and spent time in person in Germany for
prison.
Is that what I... What did I say?
Person.
I'm drunk because I did not hear
that. Chill on the martinis.
I did not even... Usually I can like catch when I'm making a mistake. Spent time in prison in Germany for... This is not funny.
Of course, you fucking up the person. The
prison
one, thing
I know.
Does sort of oddly fit here, and
it
that's
does.
Disturbing.
That is disturbing. For raping a 17-year-old while stationed there as a U.S. Army private... Again, very fucked up and disturbing.
Yeah.
Anyway, more than 40 years after this attack, the victim flew to the U.S. to testify at Franklin's murder trial. I thought this was hilarious. Like, yeah, I did survive, and yeah, I am going to fly my ass from Germany and come in and testify against you.
And amen to that.
Yeah,
she
exactly.
should have done that. She did absolutely right.
She shared details of the crime, which included Franklin and two other men. This is so disturbing. So here's a quote from the LA Times, quote, "The woman addressing the jurors in the penalty phase of the of Franklin's capital murder case said the car she was forced into drove off with her inside. Eventually, the vehicle pulled into a field where the men took turns raping her. Deputy District Attorney Beth Silverman asked the woman how long the attack lasted. She says the rest of the night to gasp from the packed courtroom audience," end quote, from that article. So this was obviously one of the most horrific things you can imagine. Yeah. And so it's, I think it's amazing that she would fly all the way from wherever she was. You know, it would be easy to put, like you said, compartmentalize this and forget about it and never,
yeah,
want to
put it in the past.
Yeah.
Like, how many Law and Order SVUs do you watch where the right. victims are like, I don't want to speak up. I just want to put this aside and forget it ever happened.
And she was like, no, I am going to, you know, get on this plane and come face him. And
I mean, clearly decades later, she has such vivid memory.
This woman who had the blade of a knife pressed against her throat sustained cuts on her torso and testified that she'd refused to go outside alone in the dark ever since. So she's clearly so traumatized. You almost wonder if this is sort of a sense of closure for her, you know?
Of course. Like, I think she wanted to see that fucker in jail.
Yeah, exactly.
Not to be crass, but...
No, I agree. Let's talk about the trial and sentencing now that we're getting to the good stuff here.
Yeah, so Franklin was finally arrested in 2010, not too long ago, when a grand jury indictment that came in 2011 was actually intended to fast-track his trial. Yeah. But a slew of courtroom delays pushed it back until last year in 2016, actually. There, he faced 10 counts of murder and one count of attempted murder. The prosecution also presented evidence that Franklin killed an additional 5 women, but he wasn't charged in their deaths. And actually, according to the LA Times, again, the women were all Black, living in South Central, struggled with addiction. They were all shot in the chest and discarded, just like trash, as we had said. The prosecution actually said the additional charges would have forced delays in the case and wouldn't have increased his punishment. So the victim's family supported the decision not to prosecute. I think we all kind of wanted to see this case just put to bed. It wasn't going to, you know, increase his time.
And similar to, I think it was last week's episode where they were like, okay, let's just get to an agreement where some of these families can move on from this.
Right.
He'll get whatever time he gets.
Yeah. You know? I mean, the guy last time got like 47 life sentences. And so it's like, does it really matter if he gets 52? I mean, it matters for the closure of the family, but I think they're getting what they want in the end.
Yeah.
Franklin never spoke during his trial. Remember, he was a shell of his former self.
Right.
Maintained his innocence, but he was found guilty of all charges and sentenced to the death penalty. He's currently in San Quentin State Prison. And where did we hear about that before, San Quentin?
Good question. Is he hanging out with the one and only Scott Peterson playing basketball and eating smoked oysters? Should I say this like Nancy Grace? Is he hanging out with Scott Peterson playing basketball and eating smoked oysters?
Yes, Nancy Thank Grace, you. He is.
I love Nancy Grace.
That would be an interesting sight to see.
Him,
well, Lonnie and Peterson just... you know, eating smoked oysters in prison.
Well, I've talked briefly about this, not to derail this, but Adnan Syed, famous from the Serial podcast, is in the prison in my hometown in Maryland, this like small town in Maryland. And there are other famous cases, famous murderers in that same prison. And I always wonder, I'm like, do they like walk by each other? Do they know?
Do they know?
They're the focus of major podcasts and media all over the world. It's just such a funny, not
I
funny,
imagine
but
these days unique. People probably are pretty well connected. It's just even being on the news or anything. I imagine, you know, they're not, they do have TVs.
Sure.
But it is kind of weird to think about being like, you're that guy that.
Yeah, just walking right past each other.
Actually, however, California hasn't executed anyone since 2006. In fact, when we were talking about this in the production meeting, Matt was like, wait, is there a capital punishment in California? And I know that they had recently voted on it a year or two ago. So to keep it going. So just because a state has it doesn't mean that they utilize that.
Yeah.
There's actually a long line of people on death row that would come before the Grim Sleeper. It's not like you get sentenced to death and then the next day you die.
Yeah, that's true.
There's 750 people on the list.
We got a note from Matt. Wow.
Wow.
So,
California, get your death penalty shit together. I got to be honest.
What do you mean by that? Are you saying like
Well, I'm anti-death penalty.
Right.
I think I can say that. So for me, like the thought of 750 people being on a list waiting to die just feel there's something so uncomfortable about that. No matter who you are, I feel very eerie about that.
That's fair.
The state can sentence someone to death, but and that number is high.
Yeah, totally.
So although media coverage throughout the search to identify the Grim Sleeper was often scarce since Franklin's arrest, he's been at the center of a frenzy. There's actually been an HBO doc made about him called Tales of the Grim Sleeper.
I didn't even know this.
Me neither. I hadn't seen it at all, but I plan on watching it this weekend.
Me too.
As well as a Lifetime movie, comprehensive trial coverage, and of course, Pelosek's book based on her reporting.
Yeah.
According to the LA Times, prosecutors believe that Franklin may have killed at least 25 additional women and that his nickname as the Grim Sleeper may no longer be fitting.
Mm.
While Franklin got this alias because of the apparent 14-year hiatus that we had talked about earlier, cops now believe he never stopped and that many of those victims' bodies just simply haven't been found.
Ugh, so disturbing.
I know. I do kind of wonder why that 14-year period they hadn't been found. Like, did he switch techniques? Like,
remember
what happened, you know?
We had talked about this. Oh, my God. I keep bringing up these episodes and forgetting. Was it the first East Area Rapist that went on like a 5-year hiatus?
Yeah. And we thought maybe he could have been injured or he got in an attack or hurt himself.
Or went to jail for some other reason.
Exactly. So it's all a lot of speculation. But actually, according to Rolling Stone, authorities have speculated that he could have disposed of more bodies because at one point he was a sanitation worker who had access to LA landfills.
The garbage collector.
Yeah. But even on a grander scale, so it's possible that that was his method during that time. We don't know. It's just speculation.
Mm. Well,
there's so many victims, and I think we should honor them.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks to Pelosek's book, we have more information on those victims. Sometimes the identity of the victims are glossed over, especially when a serial killer preys on an underprivileged population.
Right.
You know, I think one thing that comes to mind was the Orlando shooting last year,
Absolutely.
Which was targeted towards gay people at Pulse nightclub in Orlando, of course. And, you know, when that happened, that was, I think, 49 or 50 people died. And everyone just kept saying, honor the victims. Say the victim's name. Don't talk
Stop
about the guy
kill.
That did
yeah.
it. You know, and I think, you know, as we talk about these things on the show, we do want to highlight the victims, although I think it's worth mentioning that we think to understand the seriousness of this and how the monstrosity of these killers, we obviously highlight them as well.
Yeah.
So for this episode, we're going to shed some light on
of
more of the victims. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was Barbara Ware, who was 23 when she was found in an alley. Police discovered her corpse after an anonymous man called 911 to report seeing a body being dumped from a van. The caller even wrote down the license plate of the vehicle, which was awesome.
Yeah, that's quick thinking.
Yeah, and police were able to trace it to a church a few blocks from where the victim was found. I'm trying not to stumble through this as I'm drunk. Ware was the daughter of Billy Ware, a neighborhood fixture and former naval officer who had connections to local politicians, according to Pelosek's book. Barbara was a rebel at a young age, and by the time she reached her 20s, she was struggling with drug addiction.
Ugh.
But, you know, I think it's worth mentioning her name. I think we have a few more
here,
too.
Of course it is. Bernita Sparks was shot and killed. There were also signs of strangulation. Sparks had lived with her mother close to where her body was discovered, which is horrifying to think about.
Right.
She also had a longtime steady boyfriend. She had just been hired as an elementary school monitor and was supposed to start her new job the following Monday, according to Pelosek's account.
Yeah, Alicia Alexander, who went by her middle name Monique, was just 18 when she was murdered. She had just stepped out to go to a local store blocks from her home but never returned. Alexander was extremely close to her dad, a man named Porter, who worked at the post office, and she loved going to the beach and going to the movies. This is all according to Pelosek's book as well.
And Valerie McCorvey, who we'd sort of mentioned before, was actually one of Franklin's last victims, found dead in an alley with signs that her body had been dumped from a car.
Mm.
She was strangled, most likely with her own necklace, and had a bite mark on her breast. Mm. She was 35 years old.
Henrietta Wright was 34 years old and the mother of 5 children. She started down a dark path after her home burned down, and she lost her job and then began abusing drugs. She was found in an alley, partially hidden under a mattress, wearing shorts that were unzipped and a polo shirt that had been pulled up to her breasts. She had been shot 2 times and had a piece of shirt shoved into her mouth like a gag. It turns out that she was Franklin's second victim. So
he kept the brutal attacks going throughout his whole reign.
Exactly.
Mary Lowe was 26 when she was found in an alley with her pants ripped and unbuttoned. She was shot in the chest at close range with a .25 caliber gun. A toxicology test found she had cocaine and alcohol in her system.
Janessa Peters was found inside a zip-tied trash bag in a South LA dumpster on New Year's Day. She had a gunshot wound in her lower back, which would have paralyzed her, and there were also signs of asphyxiation, Pelasek reports in her book. She was only 25 years old.
And how do you pronounce her name?
Lucretia?
Lucretia, maybe. Lucretia Jefferson was 22 when she was found under a mattress in an alley. Mm-hmm. She was wearing a dress and stockings and had a napkin. This is interesting.
Yeah.
And gruesome. She had a napkin with the word AIDS written on it, placed across her face. She had been shot twice in the chest, and a crack pipe was in her pocket, according to Pelasek's account.
And, you know, a lot of this, you know, it is reported that a lot of these people, these sex workers, had also participated in drugs.
Sure, and that's why they resorted to prostitution.
Right, but it also makes you wonder, and I know one of these accounts, I forget which one, you know, it was understood that maybe the pants were put on after the death. And I just,
they had no underwear on,
exactly.
But they had pants on.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And it just had me wondering, like, how much of this stuff was, like, planted or, like,
sure,
you know, just disguised or created or set to make it look like something that maybe it could possibly not have been, you know?
No, and that's a good point. And I was thinking about this for the past few days and how gruesome and odd and sexual all of these, you know, these murders really were, and the volume of it. That is just even more surprising that he got away with it for so long.
Yeah, totally.
Like, that is, even DNA being what it is, a footprint, a shoe, whatever. I mean, if his son hadn't been arrested and DNA taken, who knows? He could still be on the loose, which is just crazy.
Well, thank God for DNA. My God.
Yeah, I know.
It's almost like, how did they even work around things, investigations, without DNA in the past? Well, that's it for this week's Murder of the Week. And
yeah, that's the Grim Sleeper.
The Grim Sleeper.
But I highly encourage you guys to look out for the other victims and read about him and read what happened.
Totally. Let's get to some listener shout-outs. I just wanted to give a shout-out to my old friend and big fan of the show, Amanda, in Morgantown, West Virginia.
Amanda.
I haven't seen her in years, but she's a big fan of the show, and she messaged me and was like, I love hearing your voice. It reminds me of, like, olden times. And I'm like, oh, that's sad. I never leave New York, so
yeah, you never
come visit.
Exactly. Blashley on Twitter says, binged every ep of Martinis and Murder over the last 2 days, and now what am I doing? Now what am I even doing with my life?
Yeah.
And she tagged us. Hopefully she wasn't looking for advice, because we could just tell her to
binge them all again. Yeah.
But thanks for listening, Blashley.
Yeah. By the way, guys, Cold Justice is returning to Oxygen. Kelly Siegler and her team will return for the season premiere on July 22nd at 8, 7 Central.
Of course, new episodes of Snapped air every Sunday at 6 and 9 on Oxygen.
And by the way, as we mentioned, our hotline is live. I want to hear my phone ringing off the hook.
I want to. Let's give them that number again.
Yes.
Because I feel like we should end every episode, so that's the last thing that they hear, and that's the first thing that they do when they hang this podcast up.
That is such a good way to put it. The number is 212-664-2072.
Oh, is that the music us out?
The music just came on. We're not finished yet.
We're
music.
Like Bette Midler. We're like, stop it.
Turn this crap
off. We will get through our speech.
Absolutely. That's 212-664-2072. Call us, say hello, tell us what's up. You have to be 18 or older, FYI.
Yeah.
And maybe one day you're going to hear your voice on an episode of Martinis and Murder.
It sure as hell will sound better than our voices.
By the way, the more you compliment us, though, the more likely you are to get on the show. I'll just put that out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if you're lying.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the lesson from this week's episode?
We haven't done that in a few weeks, have we?
Because it's usually like house party is. I mean, mine was sort of don't get into unknown orange Pinto, to be precise.
I think I think one thing to consider is that when your bartender makes you a mojito and says it's disgusting, go ahead and keep drinking it, because it makes it a lot more fun to do a podcast.
And it makes him feel better.
Makes him feel better about his life. Absolutely.
And one of us cares about that.
That's true.
We're going to leave it up to you, audience,
to figure that out.
To decide which one gives a shit about Matt. Hint, it's not me.
It's not you. Yeah. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with an all-new episode.
Bye, guys. Bye.